Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome to the Dr. Hockey Podcast.
Welcome to the Dr. Hockey Podcast. I'm Dr. Jay Calvert, and I am on today with a very special guest. Of course, my co-host, Dr. Jason Berkley, who needs no introduction. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Jay. Thank you.
Great. Well, we're excited to have Andrew Shaw on the podcast today to talk to us about his career and things that have kind of led him to where he is today. And thanks for being on with us, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited about this.
Well, great. Well, we want to get right into it because I got to tell you, you know, you're the way that you play hockey and the way that you were with the Chicago Blackhawks as a grit player, we really enjoyed watching you play. That's one thing first and foremost.
Well, thank you. Chicago and Montreal are both amazing cities to play. Even the fan base there were amazing. So they made it easy for me to do my job.
Yeah, well, you came into the league at a really good time to get onto the Chicago Blackhawks, that's for sure.
Yeah, I come into a great situation, and I think the team was missing a little bit of what I brought, and I think that's why I fit in so well, and I think helped the team be even more successful as well.
And Andrew, as you can obviously tell behind me, I'm obviously a Detroit fan, so don't get offended.
I won't. But, we beat them out in 2013, so.
I know. I remember it all too well. I heard it from my friends from Chicago as well. But one of the things I think that about you as a player, and regardless of your affiliation with a team, you can see when a player has an edge, when you can, even though you're angry at them, you have to appreciate their game. And the kind of combination of you and also Bickle on the team were two kind of a 1-2 punch almost. You guys kind of fed off each other a lot. What was that like, and what was your relationship off the ice with him?
Well, Bix is a big man, so I always could get away with doing whatever I wanted because I knew he had my back. So that was kind of nice. We were both physical, played hard, both went to the net. So I think playing together, we made each other better. And off the ice, we're like really good buddies. We're still good buddies today. And I was actually in his wedding party. Even knowing him just a short time, I knew we were going to be friends for, the rest of our lives. Both small town kids, pretty easy going, same interests, same background when it comes to family as well. So we clicked right away.
Yeah, it seemed like that on the ice too. You could always tell that where there was one, there was the other. And I think that's one of the things that even though I'm, as a Red Wing fan and bitter rivals, you could appreciate your game. And I think that's something that transcends fandom. It's more about what hockey's about. And I think that's a remarkable thing when I'm watching you play, even though it was frustrating, but it was remarkable to watch. So,
I mean, hockey was, it's not just a sport, it's a brotherhood, it's a family. And, we go to war together every night out there. So we became a close team. And I think that was another reason why we had so much success as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We see these teams that are chock full of talent, yet a lot of the teams don't make it as far as your Blackhawks did. I mean, you were there for two Stanley Cups. And then I just watched the Edmonton Oilers get eliminated from the playoffs. What from your standpoint as a player, what happened to Edmonton that Winnipeg runs them over the way that they did?
I just think they're very predictable. Their offense is run by, mainly one or two guys where you need an entire team to win a Stanley Cup. I think in any sport, to win any championship, it's not just one or two individuals. It's an entire team. I just don't think they had the depth, and I don't think they had the guys to push each other, to hold each other accountable. I don't know. There's a lot of things wrong. Obviously, it's they've been a good team in the regular season for years, but just can't seem to get anywhere come playoff time. So something, you know, it's tough to say what's wrong, but definitely some changes need to happen that way for sure.
Right, and you see it because if you look back at your two-time Stanley, I mean, granted there was a year in between there, but you know, the Chicago, or a couple of years, the Chicago Blackhawks that you played on, that team was chock full of talent, but you know, you really were able to pull it together when it counted. That team worked as a unit. It wasn't an individual. It wasn't just, you know, a Taze, or, you know, it was everybody working as a unit. And you really see that, especially, I mean, I remember there was just, it seemed like the Chicago Blackhawks were going to win every Stanley Cup for the next 10 years. That's how people thought about the team that you were on. And obviously that didn't happen, but that's the kind of cohesiveness that you were able to bring. And your role on that team was very clear cut. And it was awesome to watch. Again, frustrating, you know, for Jason Berkley. I'm happy to hear that he was frustrated. That makes me feel good, because he was rubbing it in my face last night that he feels better about watching the playoffs now that the Penguins are out. So
he's a big Penguins fan. So that's, I can now enjoy hockey again.
I love the chirping that can go on through buddies, just with the sport of hockey and everyone having different teams. But yeah, I think the Chicago team we were a part of, I think as teammates, we were able to hold each other accountable and no one would take it personally. Everyone knew we needed to win. We wanted to win. And if you had to call a guy out, you called a guy out, but you made sure you were playing sound yourself, because you don't want to be that hypocrite that's, you know, calling your teammates out, your brothers out, and you're not going out there and doing your part as well. But we had a little bit of everything. You know, we had the skill, we had the grit, the hard work. I think we just had a lot of swag. I always say we had swag. We were so calm, even when losing a game, that we'd find our way back. Or if we had the lead, we knew what we needed to do to keep that lead. You know, I think everyone sacrificed maybe personal success just to get team success. And I think that hockey's losing that. I think everyone's driven by points and, you know, being a star, that it's the teams that stay away from that have success late in the year. And that's why I think Edmonton struggled, because they had two guys running their offense all year long. And as a team playing that, you focus in on shutting those two guys down for, you know, you got seven games to do so. And they didn't have that secondary scoring and that work ethic to battle through it, where in Chicago, I found we did. Even if we're down two goals in a game, we'd find our way back. And it wasn't always the superstars that were getting those big time goals. It was, you know, guys on the third and fourth line as well, or your low paired D that were chipping in. And that's what makes a team. It's the depth, and I don't know, just sticking together through thick and thin.
Andrew, who are some of your players that you either idolized or modeled your game after growing up? And what team was your team that you rooted for coming from Ontario? You have kind of a big selection of, you know, Canadian teams to pick from.
Well, I'm in Belleville, Ontario. So we're in between Ottawa, Montreal, and Toronto, like smack in the middle.
Right.
My dad wouldn't let me cheer for the Habs because he hated them. Ottawa was never that great. So I didn't want to cheer for them. And the Leafs seemed to let everybody down year in, year out. So I ended up cheering for Buffalo. There was a few players on that team I was growing up. I really enjoyed watching. And I don't know, I just kind of fell in love with them. And playing in Niagara in the OHL, I got to go to a lot of Buffalo games as well. So just made that love grow a little bit more. But a player, I would have to say a guy like Wendell Clark, you know, Darcy Tucker, you know, just hard-nosed, physical, do whatever they could do to help the team win. I think those are the type of players that I looked up to.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of very similar style to your game. So that was two excellent role models, regardless of how you want to play. But for sure, those are great players. I mean, legendary players.
I didn't have the skill that all these kids have these days. So I had to work a little bit harder. And those guys, watching them just helped drive me.
Well, when, you know, and to turn to a different topic, obviously, you know, you've retired from the NHL at this point. You know, when was it sort of creeping into your mind that, you know, and I hear many, many NHL players say this. They say your career goes by fast. Enjoy it while you're there because you don't know when it's going to end. And it doesn't matter how it winds up getting there. Some people, you know, have to retire for other things. They don't have an opportunity. You had opportunity to keep playing, but you've opted to make the choice, and the doctors have probably helped you with this choice. But when did you start thinking in the back of your mind, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to continue playing in the NHL?
I don't know. I had to be about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, just several concussions. I couldn't seem to get through a year without getting a pretty severe concussion. And, you know, doctors were warning me then that it's not looking good, that it seems like it's going to keep happening. You know, it was just super repetitive. And, you know, and then I started having two little kids running around, and mm-hmm. you start to see how your mood's changing and how your sleep's being affected and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was working my way out of it each time. And I remember the last 2 years ago when I first got traded back to Chicago, I suffered a concussion, and it was a pretty shitty 3 months. And, you know, I was depressed and had mad anxiety and was having headaches every morning, even though I would sleep through the night, and finding myself with these dizzy spells and being very nauseous all the time. And I knew I could work my way out of it because I've done it before. But when you're in that moment feeling like that every day for several months, you know, your head's, you know, you're telling yourself, like, I got to be done. Like, I can't do this anymore. This quality of living isn't worth it anymore. You know, I have a family to take care of. But then you work so hard, and you get out of that, and you start feeling like yourself again. And the moment I started feeling good again, all I was thinking about was playing hockey again. I'm so excited to play hockey. And it's a dangerous thing. You know, hockey's you know, it's an addiction to me. And all I wanted to do was continue playing. And I knew with this last concussion as well that I knew I felt like I should quit and be done with it. But I knew once I got out of that feeling that I want to get right back out there and be out there competing and battling with the guys. I don't know if it's because I won so much when I was young, you know, just in the OHL as well, the NHL, that I just got addicted to that winning feeling and being on top of the world and feeling invincible, that I kept trying to get back to that maybe. I don't know, but this last go around, I had to listen to doctors. You know, I got a family, I got a long life ahead of me, and I want to be able to live it, enjoy, you know, my kids, my family, my success. So I finally listened. They talked me into it, and you know, they wouldn't clear me to play. So I had to make that decision, and I'm glad I did, but I'm going to miss it. I miss it already watching playoffs. You know, you get those butterfly feelings, and it's going to be tough, but there's more to life than hockey. And I've realized that the last year.
Were there any players or former players, friends or otherwise, that you talked to that may have gone through the same type of thing, that maybe that you considered their advice and what things that they might've told you, kind of put it together to help you with this decision?
I mean, yeah, you have old teammates reach out, friends reach out, but no one wants to be that guy to tell you to stop playing. They don't, you know, they don't want you to get mad at them or regret them or anything like that. But they talked about their experiences and what they did to get better and feel better. And, you know, me going through it several times, I kind of figured out over the years how to get through it. But yeah, I think the transition is hard. I mean, you know, for the last, 14 years, I've had people tell me where to be, what to eat, what to wear, how to act. And now I got all this freedom and it's a little scary.
Yep. Well, oh, I'm sure. I mean, it's, you know, that we, as doctors, we train in these residencies for, you know, my residency was 7 years long. I did medical school for 4 years, 7 years, where when you woke up in the morning, like your whole day was already planned out. You already knew where you had to be. And it was, you know, for 7 years straight, that's all you did was, you know, operate, do surgery, see patients, everything, you know, take care of traumas, somebody got shot, whatever. You just work. And all of a sudden you finish your residency and it's like, okay, so now go build a practice. And it is a jarring experience to now have, you know, there's no blueprint for your day, you know, let alone your year or whatever else. So, you know, we totally get that. And especially when you're like, okay, so now I'm not doing this. What do I do next? And, you know, it must be a very interesting thing and exciting, but also, as you said, it can be very scary.
Yeah. And to echo what Jay was saying, you know, when you're in your training, you have a safety net. You have that attending doctor that you always present your case to that is ultimately responsible for the patient care you're giving. And then when you get out there and you see your first patient and you don't, there's nobody there to talk to kind of back up what you're saying, that scary feeling, I'll never forget the very first patient I saw. I said, wait a minute, there's no one here. It's me. They're coming to me for an answer. So I can relate in a similar sense to what you're going through. Like, what do I do now? What do I do for my day? And, you know, in life, it's all about finding yourself. And I mean, the fact that you were able to walk away from something like that because of your health and because of your children, I mean, there's utmost respect because not many people do that. They don't know when to call it quits. And that's, I mean, you should be really commended for that. That is a really a heroic thing to do.
Well, I know if I didn't have a wife and kids, I'd play hockey till the day I died. So they're my saving grace, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do that. You have to take the bull by the horns when it comes to, you know, making the right decision on that one, because, you know, you go out there and you take, you know, one more concussion and it's the big one, then it's a whole different world for your wife and kids for sure. Not let alone for yourself. So it is a very, it's a very family oriented and selfless decision to make, because you're right. If you didn't have them as that safety net in terms of making the right decision for yourself, you just keep going. Like, that's how we all are. We drive and drive and drive for success, which initially gets you there. But then you have to also, you got to learn to like shift gears, and you don't necessarily have to go any slower, but you have to change gears. You have to change the direction. And you can do so many other things. I mean, you're now a two-time Stanley Cup champion with immense NHL experience, and you've got the world at your feet because your brain still works. That's the key. And you know that those doctors, I'm sure they were telling you, look, you have a bad one, and this is a different game. Now you're not only can you not participate, but now they got to take care of you. And that's a big issue.
Yeah, you don't want to put that burden on anyone. You know, you want to be healthy and there for them. And I just want to be able to enjoy my kids and my wife and be happy. So it was the right decision and I'm okay with it. And I have no regrets the way I played or how long I played. Just going to live my life to the fullest now.
What's next?
Do you think you'll let your children play hockey?
Totally. Yeah. My daughter loves it right now. My son, you know, I work out every day and when I'm in the gym, he comes in and I give him a ball and a stick and he just fires it around. And my daughter loves to go on the ice and skate. So, I mean, it's not going to change what happened to me in hockey. Is not going to change my opinion on the sport at all. I want my kids to enjoy it. The amount of friends and relationships that I made through hockey alone, it was worth it. I mean, how many people I've touched, how many people have reached out to me, congratulating me and telling me their story of how I inspired them. And it was all worth it. And if I could make someone happier, make someone's day, just by going out there and being an animal on the ice, I mean, it was totally worth it. And I hope my kids get to experience something like that as well.
And you're feeling pretty good these days. Are you headache wise? I mean, emotional and everything else, things are okay for you?
I mean, yeah, sometimes I get a little emotional. I mean, I have a kid that's 3 and a year and a half, and they don't listen. So that can be very frustrating. I think how I feel is how most dads would feel. So, you know, I feel good. No headaches. Sleeping's pretty good. My kids are good sleepers, so they don't interrupt too much. But I think time's going to help heal it as well. And
yep,
you know, just finding myself and getting into a routine here back home, all that helped. You know, a lot of changing at once and moving, and you know, the big decision of being done playing. There's a lot of toll and a lot of stress. So I think as time passed, I'm going to even feel even better.
Right. I'm sure you will.
Yeah. We had Bill Lindsay on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And he says, it's really hard to be a fan. He says that he sits there and he says, I don't understand why couldn't he make that pass? Or why didn't he take that check? He's sitting in the fan in the stands now thinking like a fan. And he says it's really frustrating because you want things to be a certain way, and these kids have to learn, and they come up through the ranks, and now it's your turn to kind of take the armchair quarterback approach to watching your favorite teams. And he says it's fun and he loves it, but obviously you'd always rather be playing.
Yeah, you would, and you always feel like you get help out and help the team be successful. And I don't know, I'm just watching the game of hockey. Hockey looks so easy. And I promise you, it's not that easy at all, but it looks so easy to me. And I'm sure fans think the same way. And it is tough to be a fan. You know, hopefully, you know, at some point in the next year or so, or a few years, I can get back into it. And I still think I still think Andrew Shaw has a lot to bring to the game of hockey. And I look forward to that as well.
Do you ever talk to Coach Quinville at all?
I do. I shoot him messages here and there. Sometimes I just send him a message chirping him or bugging him. Other times congratulating him and thanking him for giving me the opportunity as well. I mean, if it wasn't for a coach like him, you know, me coming in at the age of 20, he helped groom me to the player I became. And I mean, he gave me the freedom to go out and be myself. And that made me a even better hockey player.
Do you have,
he's an awesome dude.
Yeah.
Oh, he's amazing. I mean, look what he's done with Florida. It's incredible. I mean, that is definitely the Q factor.
Oh, it is. And I just miss seeing him around. You know, he's that hard, you know, he just seems like he's that gritty, mean guy, and he'll look at you and crack a joke really quick and walk away laughing. And I don't know, he was a lot of fun.
Well, do you think in the future, do you see yourself getting into any part of the NHL as your future work? Do you want to get into coaching, scouting, anything that's coming to mind for where you're going to take it?
Yeah. I don't know what it's going to be yet. I don't know what you don't know what you'd enjoy. I think I'd be a really good coach. I can motivate. I can push. I can use my experiences to help others. And I don't know. I just have a really good feel for the game. So it could be something for sure. But right now, you know, after being on the road so many years in a row, I'm just going to spend some time with my family first.
I'd be remiss in my job here if I didn't ask you about the double overtime playoff goal that was stolen from you against Anaheim when you gave the soccer play of the header into the net. Tell us about that for a moment.
Oh, man. I love this play. Everyone seems to love it, too. It's totally reaction. I mean, standing in front of the net, battling like I did, and Kaner gets a shot from the side and pops straight up in the air in front of me, and I think I got Boschman in front of me playing pretty hard on me, so I knew he wasn't going to give me the chance at that puck at the ice, that I wouldn't be able to get a stick on it. So
right,
my eyes looked up at it, and I just got all excited. I just jumped and shoved my head into this puck, and it was like the perfect header goal you could get. And
it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then obviously I was excited, and I threw a big celebration, and then they ended up calling it back. But we ended up winning in triple overtime, right. So no hard feelings there at all.
Did you know it's illegal to actually forcibly head the puck in, or is it just like instinct?
Just instincts. I mean, back in the OHL, when I went to the Memorial Cup, a player headed a puck in, and not as cool as how I did it, but they waved it off as well. But that's not in the back of your mind when you're playing. Right. Just, you know, you're reacting
to
everything happening fast. So, but it's a pretty cool video, cool picture. Yep. I've signed a ridiculous amounts of pictures of me heading the puck in the net.
Yeah, my friend Steve, who's probably the biggest diehard Hawks fan of all time, he insisted I ask about it. And I said, oh, don't worry, I'm going to ask about it. It's well known in hockey lore.
Yeah, I've seen that. I think Colin White in Ottawa did it last year or this year. I think it was last year as well. And it's just, I mean, I get why it's a rule. You know, you don't want anyone getting hurt because of it. But when that happened, it was pretty cool.
That was an awesome play.
Great celebration too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, you know, listen, we don't want to take your whole night up, so I really appreciate you coming on with us. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you, what do you think about the way that the playoffs are being run this year, given the COVID-19 situation? Has it been enjoyable? Do you think they did a good job with it? Would you do something different? And who do you think is going to win the Stanley Cup?
With the whole situation with the pandemic, I mean, it kind of has to be done this way. And the first round has been awesome because you've already played these guys like 8 times all year. So the rivalry and the hatred for one another is pretty awesome. I mean, you can see like that Florida Tampa series was unbelievable to watch. And I mean, and then all the Canadian teams playing each other as well. It's pretty cool. But you're going to see a lot of really good teams beat out early because of it, I think. But I don't know. I still think, you know, the two best teams are going to meet in the finals, and should be a good one.
Who do you think it's going to be in the finals? Who do you think's coming? Who's going to make it down?
It's so hard to say. I mean,
it is.
Minnesota could take out Vegas tomorrow, but I still think Vegas has it. And I think the three top teams are Vegas, Colorado, and Tampa Bay. Actually, in Carolina, I don't know. It's a toss-up, but I'm going to say Colorado. I'm cheering on my buddy Brandon Saad.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's an excellent player. Amazing. And he reminds me he's just a very gritty guy as well, and just really gets in there and he scores goals when they're needed. He's a clutch player, and I think Colorado's stacked. I mean, they have talent up and down those lines, and they don't let the other team get the puck like at all. So it's very hard to score goals when you can't get the puck.
No, they're good. They're good. The Islanders are a good team too. Obviously they beat out Pittsburgh last night, which was good to see. I got a buddy there, Nick Letty. I'd like to see go on as well. So cheering for those guys as well.
That's great. And Toronto obviously is heading in the right direction. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I don't know, man. What's the score? It was, last I looked, it was 3-1 tonight. So, you know, you get – Carey Price gets hot.
Yeah.
Playoffs, anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I was it's interesting that the Canadian, you know, teams playing each other has been really fun to watch. Those are great rivalries. And I know that the people of Canada have really enjoyed it. That's been a very fun aspect of the NHL this year.
Well, it's all we got right now. You know, we're still locked down up here. We're not allowed to do anything. So hockey's all we got.
I told Jay the only thing that's positive for the Leafs fans or for the Leafs team is that there's no one in the stands to throw jerseys on the ice if they lose the series. So
after they go up 4-0 and then end up blowing a 4-goal lead. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, the matchups are tough. I mean, the Islanders look totally solid. But I mean, Keith Jones said something last night that was really key. He said, look, you know, Pittsburgh had 3 1-goal leads and they gave them all up. They deserve to lose. And it's like, that's really the truth. I mean, they imploded and the Islanders, you know, really beat them down badly. So it's going to be interesting. The next round is going to be, I think it's just going to be even better than this round. It's going to get really, really tough and intense.
Well, it's like I said earlier, you know, when I was in Chicago, we had that team that we knew how to win. We were up a goal. We knew how to hold the lead. And teams like that learn that quick in playoffs or in regular season that are going to have success.
Well, true. Let's stay tuned and we'll watch, and we're going to definitely stay tuned for the rest of the story on Andrew Shaw. Looks like it's chapter 2 is just getting started. So we're excited about that and for you. And, you know, I think it's a brave decision and big decision that you made, but we wanted to talk to you about it because it is important. A lot of players listen to these podcasts, and there's somebody out there who's going to hear this and say, you know what, I got to think about that also and be smart. And that's a really, really key aspect of playing the game is knowing when that this is not the time for me to keep doing this. And so we commend you on your decision and for talking about it and being so open with us. And we thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Love getting my story out there. And I hope I can help anyone. If you help one person, you did some good. So thanks for having me, guys.
Be Absolutely. Safe up there in Canada, too.
Will do.
All right. The Dr. Hockey Podcast, signing off with Andrew Shaw. Thanks so much, Andrew.
All right. See you guys. Thank
Take
you.
Care. Bye-bye. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Hockey. Check out new episodes every Thursday and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.